This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back. Junkies coming to you live from D.C. on 106.7 The Fan. I didn't watch the AAF this weekend. I also didn't watch the Grammys.
Oh, can we get into the Grammys?
A lot of people watch the Grammys.
I watched it. You'll be surprised.
You watch the red carpet.
I watched the red carpet.
I watched the red carpet.
And then I watched the opening act, and I didn't even know who the girl was.
How did you watch the Grammys when True Detective was on? Like, we've been waiting for True Detective.
Doesn't start till 9.
Well, the Grammys started at 7.
The red carpet started at 7, and then the actual Grammys show started at 8. I watched 5 minutes of it and went to bed.
Here's my thing with the Grammys. I like the Grammys because I think it's the most prestigious music award by far. Right? All these other awards are stupid. I like the Oscars and Grammys.
I didn't know any. I mean, I knew some, but most of them, I didn't know
a lot of the
who
songs.
They were.
Here's the thing. And I like, people were grilling me because I had this comment, but I was watching and I tweeted, there's just too many sort of contrived super group performances. You know, like all of a sudden, Miley Cyrus is singing with Shawn Mendes and somebody else is playing the viola and somebody else is on the mandolin. And it's like, well, that's not even a real thing. You're just trying to make something. And they're doing it all the time.
I remember seeing the promos, and the promos, they listed like 15 names and they said, and that's just the first hour.
You didn't know? Yeah. Like when Alicia Keys did her little thing, like she's a superstar. I enjoyed that.
Was she the host?
I guess she was the host.
Yeah.
She was playing two pianos. I've never seen this before, and maybe this is a shtick that piano players do. She was playing two pianos at the same time. She had them right next to each other. So the left hand was on one, the right hand was on the other. It's probably not that different, but she
guys wanna go.
It sure looked cool
with me.
What she was doing. And she did a bunch of hits, and then she was doing like, she would sing like a Drake song. She would do her take on it, or she would sing like
her take on Drake.
I didn't see that.
Miley Cyrus song. She'd do her take on it. And that was really cool. And I love performances. But there were so many sort of contrived supergroup performances, and then with people that we don't know. I guess they're trying to be fair to all the genres. Mm-hmm. They put all these other people out there, but like, I guess that's a country person, but I don't know who that is. Certainly not the most famous one.
Kane Brown or something like that.
I don't know who these guys are.
I want to know the people. Well, I do.
I don't know who they are.
The only reason
I want to know the people in the AAF, and I want to know the people in the Grammys.
I only knew Kacey Musgraves because my daughters listened to Kacey Musgraves,
right.
And she's great.
Yeah,
she actually came to D.C. I wanted to get tickets, but I couldn't. Corona couldn't hook me. Next time, maybe. And she's fantastic. But some of these other, I didn't even know who they were.
Well, two that I knew performed together, Post Malone and the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I heard that was terrible.
You hate Post Malone.
I heard it was awful.
Not impressed.
Well, I thought the Chili Peppers, I don't know what song they did. I didn't recognize the song.
It was awful.
And I like Post Malone. But he didn't add anything to that song.
I saw that, and I saw 2 minutes of Diana Ross, and I said, I don't need to watch the Grammys.
Yeah. Who needs
Grammys
to watch?
Grammys is not for me.
I used
to love the Grammys 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah. Jason.
Because I knew the artists.
Right.
They did a Dolly Parton bit. Dolly Parton!
How old is Dolly Parton? 80?
I looked it up. I think she's 76 or something. Mm. Whatever she is. And then they did a Diana Ross thing.
Skewing old.
Who's watching that?
I don't know.
Everybody's singing 9-2-5, and I'm like,
that must have been awful.
But you know what? 9-5 bits?
I don't know. The Chili Peppers sing
with Post Malone.
And Post Malone is so disturbing. I'm a Post Malone fan. I really like his music. He's so disturbing to look at with all the tattoos and the teeth and the.
He makes me feel very clean about myself.
Yeah. Makes me feel like Brad Pitt. Yeah, look at him.
By the way,
this song. What song is this?
I don't know.
This is the Red Hot Chili. I don't even know what song this is.
Not Californication. It's not Under the Bridge.
It's not one of their sillies to me. And I like. I'm not like Cakes. I like the Chili Peppers.
Cakes Under the Bridge. Bulletin. Yeah, play the hits. People want to hear hits.
He was just.
Hey, did you also notice? So, Song of the Year is like a really big deal.
That's another thing. Everyone's confused by Record of the Year, Song of the Year. Nobody gets it.
Isn't that big though? Song of the Year.
I would think.
Yeah,
so,
I think so.
I don't understand why Childish Gambino didn't show up to the Grammys to receive the award.
Yeah, I don't know why. Because the Grammys, that
it's
the
like a real,
one.
It's like a you, really
you win a
big
Grammy,
deal.
That's not like winning a.
Is he protesting something? Because if he does, if he wins a Grammy and he doesn't care,
I think there might be some protesting going on.
Because if he doesn't care about it, then why should I?
I think they probably hate Trump too.
I don't know, no idea.
Well, is that the guy that also works on TV though? Childish Gambino.
Yeah, he's an actor too.
And maybe he's busy.
Maybe he's working.
But I've never heard of her. Brandi Carlile. The only reason I know Chloe and Halle is I took a picture with them when they were in PGC like 2 years ago.
I don't even know who that is. Chloe and Halle.
Yeah, they sang America the Beautiful in the Super Bowl.
Made me feel
I don't know. Cardi B is terrible.
She lip synced her whole thing and it was terrible.
She's wearing a wackadoo dress.
I mean, I just don't know.
She was doing some motions that you probably would turn your TV off if you had kids.
Hey, did you see Cardi B and Offset kiss on the red carpet, Jason?
I did not. I missed that one.
Cardi B's tongue is the size of your hand.
Oh, yeah?
It's the biggest tongue I've ever seen in my life.
Gene Simmons' tongue?
Yeah.
Really?
It was kind of hot.
That's hot? That sounds a little off-putting.
Cardi B.
Just watch the video.
Offset?
Yeah.
Who's Offset?
That's her husband. Migos. That's her boyfriend.
His name is Offset. Off again, boyfriend.
That's her baby's daddy.
Oh, okay.
I know that. I don't know if they're married, but they're definitely...
I can see why he keeps crawling back.
Right. Well, you should... Did you ever read about what she said about his... Jimmy Johnson when they were broken up about how, you know, she kind of hated him, but she missed his Jimmy Johnson. Yeah. What a show it is.
It's not surprising.
That's a show.
Oh, Musgrave's coming to Wolf Trap in September.
But the other thing that's always
annoying. I'm going that cakes.
Yep.
Is I actually.
Set it up.
I really think Lady Gaga's a freak talent, right? So it's not necessarily my cup of tea, but I don't mind watching her perform. But when she wins an award, she's over the top with the, you know. Just like emotional and just, it's just too much. All about me. It's just, it's too much.
I don't know. Well, I was watching True Detective.
I did watch about an hour of it.
I am going to watch True Detective, Walking Dead, and a little bit of the Grammys today because I DVR'd it. I just want to see some of the performances.
Oh, DVR'd the Grammys?
Not me.
Because
I want to see the performances, but you're telling me they all sucked, so I guess
they all sucked, but it's just too many contrived super groups.
You
aren't even like Alicia Keys because I know you don't like her,
I'll forward through all that.
Alicia Keys was good. I thought that was
I'll watch that one.
Yeah.
But I'm not watching Dolly Parton. She's 100.
Dolly Parton, fast forward. Diana Ross, fast forward.
I mean, based on what you described, there's nothing I should be watching.
If they have 14 people and you don't know 13 of them, fast forward it.
I'm not going to give anything away.
Don't
I watched both True Detective Walking Dead.
Jesus, what did you stay up till midnight?
Stayed up till like 11:30.
No regard for sleep.
He really doesn't. And he looks at me like I'm strange.
To watch True Detective. Cakes watched
it. All right, rate it 1 to 5.
5.
Wow.
I'd give it a 4. Had a few slow parts.
Okay. All right, and rate Walking Dead 1 to 5.
3.
Ooh.
Here's why.
Well, set up.
Here's what I do.
You're going to give it away now.
No, this is what I do. When they're just walking through the woods, there's so much downtime on that show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That you could just
I know you want to see the action.
Yeah. Fine, get to them talking.
Well,
there's just one guy just walking through a meadow
okay,
for 30 seconds.
But that's why I DVR them.
Right.
You wasted more of your life than I will. Because it aired at the
same time as True Detective. So I watch True Detective live, and then I can fast forward through
Walking
Dead. I'm not up as late.
Yeah. All right.
So watch an hour episode.
By the way,
like 40
when
minutes.
You're finished today, only 2 episodes left of True Detective.
I know it's short.
Are we really getting closer? Like, do you feel like there's a big break? Oh, there's a breakthrough.
I still don't know. I have no idea who kicks the suspect.
Apparently, the ending.
Yeah,
really
you think
good.
You haven't figured out with 2 episodes to go?
Not completely, but they definitely give you some vital information.
Sure.
Really, it's a critical episode.
Yes.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This right now is the great Cal Ripken Jr., of course, Hall of Famer. He has the 2019 Ripken Coaching Forum coming up Saturday, March 10th from 12 to 5 p.m. at Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium. You can always go to RipkenBaseball.com for more info. And before we get into that, I want to ask Cal about his interaction with Frank Robinson over the years. Of course, the great Frank Robinson passed.
Mm-hmm.
and I'm sure he had a little relationship with Frank. Hey, Cal.
Hey, yeah, that's I've been thinking a lot about Frank here the last couple of days.
Tough.
Frank was very instrumental in certain parts of my career. I remember he taught me how to hit again when I thought I forgot how to hit.
Really?
He told me the story. It was about halfway through your career. And when you have a long career, you really don't know what are the signs that your career is coming to an end. You know, all of a sudden you don't get any hits and you feel like you can't hit and you wonder, I mean, is it happening at 32? And I remember sitting with Frank Robinson and he said, you know what? He said, I had the exact same thing happen to me. All of a sudden, about halfway through my career, I started thinking about things and doubting it. And he said, and then I had to rethink it. He says, you didn't forget how to hit. We'll just have to work back from the beginning. So I think that was one of the few times where my dad couldn't help me. But someone like Frank, who had a long career that could experience that, dad knew everything about baseball. And he was the encyclopedia of baseball, except he didn't experience those kind of things. Hmm. And so it was really meaningful to me that Frank took the time to sit down and kind of share his feelings in the middle of his career, his Hall of Fame career. And it really gave me a starting point. And we came back, and then I came back the very next year and had my best year.
Hmm. So when that happened, Cal, I'm not sure what year you're talking about, but when that happened, was it just a confidence thing or was it a fundamental thing? Or were you breaking down physically? What exactly was it?
No, there wasn't a whole lot of breakdown physically. It was more mentally.
Yeah.
It was a difficult time in Oriole history. If you go back and really want to get into it, it was a time when we went to a rebuilding. My dad got a chance to be the manager for a brief period of time. My dad got fired. Frank Robinson replaced him at that time. So there was a lot of emotions that were going around, centering around who's to blame for the rebuilding. You know, did dad get a fair shot? You know, and we all were assembled, you know, together, and so. Frank came in, you know, right after my dad was fired. He took over, and he pulled my brother Billy and myself into a side room and said, look, he said, I didn't lobby for this. I didn't get it. I didn't try to get this job. He said, but it's happened. And he said, and somebody's got to fill this role. And he goes, I think I'm the best person suited for this role. And I just wanted you guys to know that.
Hmm.
So I thought that was a really cool thing that he did. That instead of avoiding it and avoiding some of the emotion, he just took it right, not to us, but he kind of put the right words in the situation at the right time to give us a starting point.
And you believed him too, right? That was key.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
Sure. The I mean, Edward Bennett Williams, our owner at the time, he was sick. And I think that there was an urgency to try to rebuild faster. You know, we were really good, as you know, in 83. We were really good in 84, but the Tigers were a little bit better. You know, our offense was good in 85, but our pitching wasn't so good. 86, we made some changes in free agency. I think we got Lee Lacy, Don Ossie, and Fred Lynn. So we still had a nucleus of some players that could win. But then all of a sudden, you know, when our pitchers like Scotty McGregor and Jim Palmer and Flanagan started changing out, we didn't have someone to replace that. So it was a difficult time in general. And I think looking back on it, you know, Frank played a pretty good role to try to stabilize that.
All right. Talking to the great Cal Ripken Jr., we were just talking about Bryce Harper a little bit. What's your take on somebody taking it kind of all the way up to the limit and maybe missing some spring training before they sign?
Yeah, I mean, that's it's hard for me to absorb all this that happened. It seems like in recent years, and this goes back a little while, that some of the negotiating tactics would be to hold your player out. It used to be if you had a prize free agent, they were the first to go
right.
In the offseason. And then everything else kind of fell in line. And then I don't know whether it was a negotiating tactic by the agents. And now it seems like it's a counter reaction from the owners saying, okay, the pressure is when you start to get spring training. And as a player, I would not want to give up spring training. Spring training, it's a lengthy period of time in spring training, mostly for the pitchers, because the pitchers have to build up to be able to pitch you know, deeper into the game and you can only do that by pitching and resting. Hitters, I would think that year we had in 95, We had a shortened spring training. It was almost the perfect time, but it was still 3 weeks of facing pitchers and trying to get yourself from the off-season mode where I'm hitting off a tee in a machine to getting back to live pitching again. So some spring training became pretty quickly. Some I struggled all the way up to the end, and then you found it. So I wouldn't want to give away any spring training.
Did you ever regret kind of giving a hometown discount? That's the one thing here in this Bryce thing. Everybody knows he's not giving anybody a hometown discount. You kind of did that kind of throughout your career to make sure you had this amazing 21-year career with the Orioles, and you're the icon that you are because of that. But did you ever think, man, especially if you're Bryce today, you know, would you want to chase the extra 50 to 100 million maybe? I mean, would that tempt you, Cal?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. To me, you know, we all played in different eras, and I laughed when some of the older-time players would say, I wish I would have played in the era that I played in, because it broke the million-dollar mark, and it's a lot of money. I mean, if you really look at it, it's a lot of money, period, you know, in whether it was my era, whether it's this era. But I always came back to some of the things that were important to me, and they weren't always money-related. Where do you want to play? Where do you have some sort of control of your life? And for me, it might be unfair to compare because I was from a little town called Aberdeen, which is 30 miles up the road.
Right.
And I wanted to be an Oriole, and I wanted to be an Oriole, you know, my whole career. Now, there were challenging moments, as I just stated earlier. When they fire your dad, you start to consider, you know, playing someplace else. But I can honestly say that you wanted to be treated fairly, you know, from a compensation. That's the business side that you let your agent deal with. But the real value to me was, you know, negotiating early, gaining control of where you want to play. I mean, it's kind of funny. I even had protection in my contract where I could play basketball in the off season. And believe it or not, that was important to me. I mean, that's how I trained. And it was a risk each and every off season that you might get hurt and you might miss some time to your baseball. But, you know, once I had a little bit of leverage in my negotiations, that I had a good track record, and I asked for it, and I was able to get it. So control was an important part to me.
If you were Bryce right now, just from a fit perspective, because it doesn't necessarily seem like he might even fit right here in Washington with the moves they've made, the young outfielders they have. I think in a lot of ways, they're kind of thrilled to roll those guys out and see what they have. If you're a Bryce, though, where would the best fit be? Take money out of the equation.
Yeah, I haven't analyzed all the different opportunities that are out there for him. I got to believe the quality of player that he is. He's a fit anywhere.
True.
And,
they'll find a space.
So
a bad team, even a bad team, would that be considered a fit? Okay, yeah, you fit there because you're great, but you're going to be bad for several years.
Well, it might not be a fit for Bryce. I'm just talking about it from a team's perspective. You can make a case for having him on a team that loses 100 games. Because he's worth coming out to watch.
Yeah.
But if I was Bryce, and you are looking for an opportunity, winning is the most important thing. If I had one mini regret in my whole career, is that I wish that I would have been in the playoffs more. I mean, if you look at, I've said this before, Derek Jeter, I think his first 14 years, Chipper Jones, I know his first 14 years, they won the pennant. And the bad year for him was losing out in the first round of the playoffs. And the same for Derek. Derek went through, I think, 3 World Series pretty quickly, and they were always in the playoffs. So a bad year for them was getting knocked out early in the playoffs. We won the World Series early in my career. And then that rebuilding process, even though there was a lot of lessons learned, I would have much rather had a chance to play. So in the playoffs. So what I'm saying is it's important. I'm sure it's important for Bryce to say, I want to play for a winner. I want to have a chance to play in the playoffs. I want a chance to win because that's really what it's all about.
Yeah. It's interesting that it's taken so long. I mean, some people think it's going to happen this week. You know, we kind of went around the room last week and gave our predictions of when it would happen. I think March 1st was the drop-dead date for most of us. But let's switch over.
Well, I mean, there is a thought in the back of your mind if you're a regular player.
Yeah.
And I mentioned this earlier, and I only know it because we went through the lockout in 95. That all of a sudden we had 3 weeks of spring training. And when you go into 3 weeks of spring training as a regular player, you say, okay, I got to play 3 at-bats right from the start. I got to get my ground balls in. I got to get my innings in the field. And so you're playing into the deep in the game, you know, early on because you're unsure. And in hindsight, I thought that was the perfect amount of spring training. So, I mean, it was a little bit more intense, and it made you worry that you might not be ready. But I would think – 3 weeks. If you have 3 weeks, it's good time for a regular player. So I think Bryce has a little bit to play with if he wants, but I wouldn't push it. I'd want to make sure I had 3 weeks of spring training to get ready for the season.
Yeah, so March 1st might be the date. All right, so let's switch over to Manny. You know, the only team we really have heard with Manny is Chicago, the White Sox, which is kind of strange to me. I don't think they're going to win much there, at least in the first few years, if he signed there. But over the weekend, apparently the Yankees got involved, or that's the rumor anyway, that's the report. Do you have any vibe on Manny Machado and where he might go?
Yeah, you know, no. So, I mean, I was going to ask you for the inside into what was going on, because you guys are living it each and every day. It is interesting to me, though, the longer this goes on, it seems like there's a change in we're not willing to give 10-12-year deals mm-hmm. anymore, but you're willing to go a higher annual salary. And so if that's the case, you're going to have more people that have a chance mm-hmm. to kind of come in late and say, well, what about us? And if you're willing to sign a one-year deal, a two-year deal, or, you know, I got to imagine that both Manny and Bryce would sign five-year deals. But, I mean, I don't know whether the 10-year deals are out there anymore. And if it's a five-year deal, or if you're a team that wants to go really, really high for one or two, you might tempt them.
Hmm. What was your longest deal in terms of years?
Oh, 5 years.
Five is the longest?
My first contract was 4 years. 4 years, and that was by design. I signed a multi-year deal after my second year, so that took me up to my free agent year. Mm-hmm. I did sign a one-year deal in 87. That was in the collusion years where you couldn't get the multi-year thing was not happening. 3 years was the most you can get.
Right.
And it got complicated towards the end. I think I was 10 minutes from having to sign to having to file for free agency.
Ooh.
And so we just said, let's do a one-year deal and we'll talk about it next year.
John, by the
way.
So there was never another team that you were even entertaining an offer from. You always were always thinking, all right, let's get something done with the Orioles.
Yeah, I mean, to me, in some ways, it's exciting to be that close to being a free agent so you can see what other people want to offer you. But once you become a free agent, there's no guarantee you can go back. And to me, I didn't want to take that risk.
Right, right.
Joined by the great Cal Ripken Jr. He has a coaching forum Saturday, March 10th from 12 to 5 at Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium. You can go to RipkenBaseball.com. I just wanted to ask you one more thing about Manny. I don't know how mm-hmm. much of a relationship you had with him. His reputation took somewhat of a hit, I would say, that towards the end of the year, and obviously in the postseason, some of the things he said, his lack of hustle. What have your experiences been with Manny Machado?
Well, I mean, early on I had a pretty good rapport. He was a shortstop coming up, and I got a chance to talk to him and get to know him a little bit. And we were exchanging, as taller, bigger shortstops, you know, just some options on how you would make certain plays. Now, if you look at how he evolved as a third baseman, you know, his physical skills allowed him to make plays that a few other third basemen could even think about. The strength of his arm, you know, throwing from different angles, making that play that mm-hmm. I thought Brooks Robinson made in the 70s. I think it was a 70 World Series on Lee May, where he was running to the other dugout, threw back across his body, and still got Lee at first. I mean, Manny was making that, you know, with the velocity of first base and in the air. So Manny is was interesting. I wondered last year whether, and this happened to Eddie Murray, because I know how good of a person Eddie is, and Eddie has the biggest heart of any of my teammates I've ever seen. But many times he was misunderstood. And I was trying to ask myself, is Manny Machado being misunderstood, you know, having to go through, you know, a tough year, trade rumors surrounding him, where is he going to go? You know, I felt that right after they fired my dad. And sometimes your reaction to those things and what happens accumulatively, you know, might look from the outside is that it's bad behavior. I think he's a good kid down deep inside. And so I think some part may be misunderstood a little bit. And I would hope that, you know, we all weren't happy with some of the comments he made when he went over to, I guess, to the Dodgers. And even, you know, not running out of ball and then commenting on not running out of ball. That doesn't seem like him to me.
Yeah. Real quick, just want to get your thought. I mean, the Orioles did their little mini tankathon last year. 47 wins is just, that's got to be the worst ever for them. And they hit the reset button. Buck's gone. He was there for 8 years. They got a new GM and a new manager, Brandon Hyde. You know, obviously lost their best player. What are your thoughts on the Orioles this year? Is this going to take a few years to get back to where they want?
Yeah, there's going to be a good dose of patience. They've traded, pretty much all their big league guys. There's still some guys that are left there, and it's really a clean sheet of paper that you're evaluating what you have, and you're looking towards the draft, and maybe you're looking at other organizations who might have more talent where you can go try to grab some talent. But you're not going to go sign free agents. I don't think you're going to make any blockbuster trades at the big league level. So it's teaching them how to play and getting them all to come together at one time. So as a fan, it's really going to challenge our patience a little bit. I'm still going to go. I'm still going to watch. But you're going to have to go into the season with a little different expectations than we have in the past.
Hey, Cal, I remember when we had you on a year or two ago and there was kind of this flirtation with maybe managing again. Are you still having those thoughts maybe in the back of your mind? Is that door still open potentially for you?
I keep them open. I don't think managing, I think the managing part might have passed me by. There was a time when there was a few cases which I was actively talking to and considering.
Right.
Maybe down deep inside, it would have been hard to think of myself outside an Oriole uniform. And it was something, you feel like you developed an expertise, and certain points in your life, you want to challenge that expertise. So in the business world or the kids' business now that we're in, it's a fun learning experience. But, being in a professional baseball has always appealed to me because you're able to use what you learn each and every day.
Right.
So I don't know if that's gone. I'm still open to some sort of association if it was the right match.
So hold on, let me read between the lines there. So you feel uncomfortable maybe putting on, say, a Nats uniform, but maybe if you worked in a Nats front office job or another team's front office job, that might be different.
I guess I was speaking too transparently. No, it just seems to me, I think generally, I'm sitting in a position that the managing job, a managing job period doesn't appeal to me.
Right.
Because you have to go back to the grind. You have to go do, you're on the road and all that kind of stuff. And you go through different periods in your life. I'm 58 now. That doesn't appeal to me. And I don't know what would appeal to me. Whether it's a front office job, whether it's just being able to talk baseball every once in a while with people in the know.
Right.
And it might not be anything. But it just seems to me in my day-to-day life now, and we're in the process of growing our kids' business, which is exciting and fun, and you're sitting around a table and we're contemplating different strategic partnerships and maybe acquisitions. That's all kind of fun. But then sometimes I sit around the table thinking, I need somebody else to advise me in this. I need somebody else to advise me in that. And I'm thinking, if I was sitting around a baseball table, I wouldn't need as many people to advise me. I could have an opinion. I could roll with things. So I often wonder about that.
Hey, you go back to calling pitches. You're good.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, that is interesting, though. When you look at, and that's really, there's a system that is needed in the big leagues for calling pitches. Mm-hmm. And I don't think a lot of teams really have that system. We used to always say that Mike Mussina could pitch anywhere, anytime, because he had his own system. And there's many pitchers that have their own system, but if there's a pitcher but doesn't, and I think the majority of pitchers rely on the catcher or rely on a system for their success, and those systems aren't there, then you have up-and-down success. So I always thought that was an area that would be fun to examine.
All right, Cal, we got to run. Best of luck with
Thanks, Cal.
Coaching forum. It's the 2019 Ripken Coaching Forum, Saturday, March 10th, 12 to 5, Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium. You get all your info at ripkenbaseball.com.
We'll make sure we promote that for you.
Yeah, please. Billy and I haven't done that in a couple of years. We've been doing other things. Mainly him is busy up there at the network, but it'll ought to be fun. If you haven't seen Billy in the coach's clinic, you haven't really enjoyed baseball.
Oh, I bet he's great.
Former NBA champion, 13-year NBA vet, played for the Wizards. Now he's a studio analyst for the Thunder and the Pelicans. He's also on SiriusXM NBA channel. It's Antonio Daniels. What's up, Antonio?
Hey, what's up, fellas? How y'all doing, man?
You're doing with a great. Couple of interesting teams in the Oklahoma City Thunder and Pelicans. Let's start with the Thunder real quick before we even get your opinion on the Wizards. Paul George is just having a phenomenal year.
Yep.
And he's become, you know, even though Westbrook's basically averaging a triple-double again, Paul George's the best player on the team.
Right. And he's playing at an MVP level. And I know for myself, watching that game on Saturday, it was nice for a national audience to see what I get an opportunity to witness every game covering this team. And that is the fact that Paul George is worthy of MVP consideration just as much as any other player in this league. Just as much as Giannis, just as much as Joel Embiid, just as much as James Harden and Steph Curry. Paul George deserves to be in that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Antonio, how frustrated is Russ, though, with his shooting's gone down to 41%? His three-point shooting is way down as well at just about 25%. I mean, like you mentioned, he's still averaging a triple-double, still a great player, but definitely struggling from the field.
I'm going to be honest with you. He's shown no frustration thus far because his major concern this year has been about winning.
Right.
And as much as the national media's narrative is about his shooting, they refuse to, and I get the thought process. I get it. But they refuse to reference his leadership because he's taken a back seat. And as much as the narrative has been out about Russell was hard to play with, you have four guys right now on that Thunder team that are having career years. And one of them is Paul George, who had, we know his resume and what he's done prior to coming to Oklahoma City. This is the best year of his career. Steven Adams, this is the best year of his career. Jeremy Grant, this is the best year of his career. Terrence Ferguson, this is the best year of his career. So everybody can focus on Russell's lack of shooting percentages. I completely understand it, but the fact of the matter is he's still averaging a 21-point triple-double, and he's still impacting the game in other ways and showing leadership and his ability to sacrifice that's helping this team win basketball games.
Yeah, they've won 9 of 10, and I mean – Westbrook is just sick. I mean, to average 11 boards, to average 11 dimes, you know, even though he's shooting poorly. I mean, to average a triple-double is stupid. It really is.
Right. Right.
So you're totally right on that, and the leadership thing is obviously key. All right, I want to switch over to the Pelicans. Before we talk about we want to get into the Wizards, too. How do you think the Pelicans / Lakers handled the Anthony Davis trade rumors? Give me your thoughts on that.
Well, I thought at the time that the timing of asking for the trade was tough because now what you're doing is you're giving an organization 10 days to make a huge decision as opposed to waiting to the summertime. Because if you go back, you see guys of this magnitude generally wait until the summertime to ask for trades. Kyrie Irving did it and Kawhi Leonard did it. And they got moved. But when you say, you know what, listen, you got 10 days to trade Anthony Davis, I don't think they were thinking about what happens if he doesn't get moved. Because if you're the Lakers, now this could really kill you and splinter your locker room for the remainder of the season. Because you dangled everybody in that locker room. You dangled everybody except LeBron James in that locker room. And if you're the Pelicans, your thought process is, now what happens if we don't move Anthony Davis? Now they're in that situation. Now it's uncomfortable for everybody involved. It's uncomfortable for the coaches. It's uncomfortable for the organization, the fans, and teammates. So the timing of the whole, let's trade him, let's ask to be traded and going public with it 10 days prior to the deadline is what I really didn't understand.
Well, if you were Demps, would you – I mean, he played in the last game. He played 34 minutes. But if you were Demps, would you just say, screw right. it, I'm not going to play you, you can sit? Or would you play him
you
like
can't.
Nothing happened?
The thing is, if you sit him, now you're talking about litigation from the league. Because rumor is the league contacted the Pelicans and said, I'm not sure how true this is. This is what I've heard. Mm-hmm. And said, every game that Anthony Davis sits, you'll be fined $100,000.
Right.
So that's what you're running into. But – you also have the option to say, listen, we're not going to play you in the fourth quarter.
Right.
Right. You know, we're going to go with the guys moving forward that we know that are going to be here long term so we can work on building something. That's your option as a coaching staff. That's your option as an organization.
Yeah, I'm not saying bench him for the entire game. I'm saying play him 10 to 15 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, and it's tough. And you know what makes it so much more difficult for the Pelicans? And I know even for me as an analyst, Anthony Davis is a great dude, man.
Mm-hmm.
He is a fantastic dude. It would be completely different if Anthony Davis was a jerk. You know, like one of those guys is like, well, arrogant and cocky and full of himself and so on and so forth. Basically, Anthony Davis is a great dude that basically wants to be in a different situation. That's all. You know, so it's tough because you want what's best for him because you know the type of guy that he is. But we all know in this league, organizations are always going to do what's in their best interest first. So I get it.
Talking to the great Antonio Daniels, NBA champion, 13 years in the league, played with the Wizards. So we did kind of want to get your take on the Wizards. A couple of us are pro the moves. They trade Otto Porter Jr. for Bobby Portis Jr. and Jabari Parker, and then they unloaded Markieff Morris. And it was mostly probably a salary dump to get underneath the luxury tax.
Right.
But they still can compete for that last playoff spot in the East, which they're not going to go anywhere. We understand that, but we'd rather have that than tanking. You played in all kinds of different situations. What's kind of your take on that?
I think if you have an opportunity to do what they did, which is dump salary and also still make a run at the playoffs, I think you did the right thing. If you remember a couple of years ago when I was on with you guys, the discussion that we had was, do you pay Otto Porter the max?
Yes.
And that's not saying whether or not he's worth the max, but as far as financial flexibility is concerned moving forward. So now you have Bradley Beal with that deal, who's worth it. You have John Wall, who played himself into that deal. So at the time, he was worth it. Now he's injured. And now you say, you know what, do we give this money to Otto Porter, understanding we're going to strap ourselves financially moving forward? And they did it. And then now you're still kind of, you know, you're an average or mediocre team. The chemistry is in question. You know, do guys really like each other? Do they not? It's tough to unload John Wall's deal. You don't want to unload Bradley Beal's deal. The next most logical deal to unload is Otto Porter's deal moving forward. So now Jabari Parker's a free agent after this year. So now you give yourself some sort of financial flexibility next year as opposed to being tied to Otto Porter's deal.
Hmm. Do you think that Bradley, tough to get into a guy's head, but do you think that Bradley maybe next year will start to get in that Anthony Davis mode and say, you know what, I'm making a ton of money, but now I really want to win and start forcing the Wizards' hand about a deal to get out of here?
Man, that's tough. I don't know, but I tell you what, Anthony, and this is why it's you keep hearing the NBA didn't really want this deal to be done with the Lakers and Anthony Davis because it sets a precedent moving forward. And the precedent that it sets is if you are a star in a certain situation and you're not happy, regardless as to how many years you have on your deal, and you want to go, tell them you want to go. So it sets a precedent moving forward. But I tell you what, if I'm the Washington Wizards, I'm doing whatever I have to do to hold on to Bradley Beal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing whatever I have to do. He is a great guy to represent your city, your fan base, and your organization. He represents all the right things. On the floor, off the floor, first thing he does when he gets interviewed is gives honor to the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ every single time. You know, and he plays the right way. He's all about winning. So if I'm Ernie Grunfeld and Shep, and I am doing all that I have to do to hold on to Bradley Beal. He is a heck of a piece.
All right, so after the trades went down, after the deadline, give me your thoughts on the Sixers. I watched a lot of that game yesterday. Mm-hmm. I understand the Lakers defensively aren't very good, but they, you know, the Sixers adding Harris, I mean, he's just a legit piece. He's averaging
close. Boy, is he.
He's so good, man. So now, yes, now that they got him, now their bench is a little thin, but they got so much talent there up in the starting five. Do you put them as your favorite in the Eastern Conference, or do you still like Milwaukee or Toronto?
Now, I know for me, I picked Toronto at the beginning of the year as the best team in the East, and they made a great deal acquiring Mark Gasol as well. But Philadelphia, realistically, they probably had the second best starting five in the league behind Golden State. On paper.
Yeah, they're all all-stars.
Right. Yeah. But the thing about Philly that kind of worries you is they hadn't figured out the Jimmy Butler situation yet.
Yeah, weird.
So if you haven't figured out the Jimmy Butler situation and now you're bringing in another guy of all-star caliber in Tobias Harris, that's what it's all going to come down to. On paper, it looks fantastic. But can the chemistry work, I think, is the most important thing. Because now you're asking guys that were number one options. Tobias Harris was close to being an all-star in the West. He led the Clippers in points and field goal attempts. But now you're asking him to be a third and sometimes fourth option on a nightly basis. Jimmy Butler, we know his resume and what he's done. And you're asking him to be a third and sometimes fourth option on a nightly basis. And these guys are unrestricted free agents that have an option to walk away when this year is over. So that's tough to ask guys in their free agent year to sacrifice like this to win. If they can do it, man, if they are willing to do that, that is going to be a team to deal with. That's easier said than done, though, especially this time of the year.
Well, Butler wanted to get out of there. I mean, he wanted to leave. Right. So now he's in a situation where he's in maybe a top three or four team. He's got to deal with it. That's what I say. Deal with it. Try to win a championship.
I agree. The league is full of guys, and I'm not saying this is what Jimmy Butler is, but it remains to be seen. The league is full of guys that say one thing and do something else. So you always hear guys say, you know what, man, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to win a championship. But what they're forgetting to say is, unless my minutes are down,
right,
or unless my usage rate is down. You know, so if you're Jimmy Butler and you're saying you just want to be in a situation to win, you got it. You got it. Now, it's different to say, I just want to be in a situation to win, but I need to be the first option. That's why I give so much credit to Kevin Love and Chris Bosh, because if you go back to those big threes, I always felt like those two guys were the most important part of those big threes because they had to sacrifice the most for that team to win, those teams to win, whether it was Miami or Cleveland. Now you're asking Tobias Harris and you're asking Jimmy Butler to sacrifice a ton for the overall success of the Philadelphia 76ers. Are they willing to do that as far as their egos are concerned?
Antonio, always love having you on. Love the passion. Check him out. He's the studio analyst for the Thunder and the Pelicans and on SiriusXM NBA.
Thanks, buddy.
For sure. Thank you, fellas.
Yep. Thanks, Antonio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.